Hello, Dreadheads. We cover some pretty heavy topics here in the asylum, and even for seasoned enthusiasts like us, researching and going down deep rabbit holes on brutal crimes and other macabre events can have an effect on your mental health. All joking aside, both Otis and I take mental health very seriously, specifically suicide, which is an issue near and dear to us both. So if you or anyone you know is dealing with depression or suicidal thoughts or actions, please reach out to someone who can help. Sometimes just talking to a stranger, free from any judgment, can make all the difference.
You can contact the National Suicide Prevention Hotline by calling 1-800-273-TALK or 1-800-273-8255. You can also visit their website at suicidepreventionlifeline.org. Again, that's suicidepreventionlifeline.org.
Just remember that your life is more valuable than anything else, and you are not alone.
And now, enjoy the show.
Coming to get you, Barbara.
Stop it! You're ignorant.
They're coming for you, Barbara.
Stop it! You're acting like a child.
Look, they're coming for you. Look, there comes one of them now.
He'll hear you.
Here he comes now. I'm getting out of here.
Johnny!
And welcome back to the Insane Asylum. It has been a little bit. Episode 45. This is the Night Living Dreads podcast. I'm Otis B. Dreads.
And SJ here, back again. Welcome back. Thanks for listening, everybody. It has been a minute. Welcome back, Otis.
Thank you. It has. It's been kind of a hectic couple weeks. I had a little music festival and then home for a few days and then took a week vacation out in Denver with my daughter and some friends of theirs. And it was a good time. But I am glad, I never thought I'd say this, but I am glad to be back in the Insane Asylum talking to all you good horror fanatics.
Hey, horror fanatics.
Yeah,
that's,
I know.
One way to put it.
This week, as I mentioned, episode 45. And this week, Night of the Living Dreads is going to be talking some Night of the Living Dead.
I see what you did there.
You see what I did there, uh-huh. I know. I it's kind of hard to realize and really put together, put the pieces together that's where the name came from for the podcast.
Yeah, it's what, episode, what'd you say, 45?
45, yes,
45.
Sir.
Yeah, 45 episodes in, and you just now realized that the name of the podcast kind of sounds like something I've seen or heard of before. Right.
Yeah,
we're finally doing it.
I know. We put all the pieces together for you, so there is no questioning or anything on your part. We don't want you to have to, think too hard about this. But anyway, okay, I digress. We are talking Night of the Living Dead and some early zombie movies. Just got a whole bunch of zombie talk and Night of the Living Dead talk coming your way. But first, as always, we got to give out some horror love. Gorehounds of Horror over there on Facebook. Got a nice big group. A lot of good people over there. They got an open group. They got a closed group. Check both of those out. Misfit Horror Fiend Club. I don't know if I've asked you this before, SJ, but are you a Misfits fan? Or did you ever get into them?
I'm going to get myself in trouble here. No, I'm not a big Misfits fan. Not because I don't like their music. Just because I was never a fan. I was never exposed to them growing up. So I have some education to do there.
Yeah.
But much love out to them. I dig the logo. It's pretty horror and metal.
Yeah, yeah, it is. And it's iconic. And that's what you're going to find over there, man. You're going to find a lot of talk about misfits, a lot of talk about horror. It's an awesome place to be. If you go over there and get in touch with one of the admins, you could probably get yourself a killer t-shirt.
Nice.
I got one. But anyway, yes, yeah, so Misfit Horror Fiend Club on Facebook. There's also Slaughterhouse, Slaughter on Wayne.
Slaughter on Garth.
You're right on it. You haven't missed a beat since that one.
I'm well trained now. Had nothing but time to think about it in the asylum, you know.
Slaughterhouse, yes. These, and then if you're just tuning in for the first time, shame on you for one. And two, I'm glad you're here. But these are all the groups that we give our love to because, you know, they allow us to take and cross-promote. We give them a little shout-out, try to get you guys over there if you're not already, and they let us post podcasts. So it's an equal sharing opportunity. I don't know where I was going with that.
Quid pro quo, win-win situation.
Win-win, absolutely. So Slaughterhouse, check them out, Facebook. Of course, one of my favorites to at least say, Zombie Boob. Very appropriate.
Ooh.
For this
I was going to say, yeah, this episode will have some Zombie Boob involved.
So. It's about damn time.
Very apropos, yes. Zombie Boob.
Zombie Boob. Let's see. What else do we have out there? After Dark. After Dark, they do, as I mentioned, they do a lot of the watch parties. So check them out. Always playing a lot of good, you know, horror movies and whatnot. So if you have time, you're just perusing the book, stop by there and check them out. And, of course, Cannabis Arcade, that is not horror, as you could probably tell by the name of the group. Cannabis is spelled with a K. I swear.
Shocking.
And so if you just need to relax, fire up a big fatty and enjoy some humor, some dark humor, you'll get all kinds over there. That's where you want to be, Cannabis Arcade. And of course, yours truly... And SJ, we are over there as well. Night of the Living Dreads. No A in Dreads, by the way. Night of the Living Dreads on Facebook. We are on Spotify. And, of course, you can check out all the podcasts as well as Spotify over at nightoflivingdreads.com. So, we got we got all of the love out. And now let's talk some zombies, my friend. Now, I mentioned to you earlier, SJ, that, you know, it's... It's kind of like when you mention, you know, a zombie, you know, what's the, you know, maybe the original zombie movie or what's one that, you know, one zombie movie that you think kind of started this, you know, tidal wave of zombie movies since that time and more so probably within the past 20 years or so. It just seems that every other year there's TV series, of course, The Walking Dead and I mean, just...
Huge.
It's huge right now in the horror genre. But if you ask most people, I think they would say Night of the Living Dead, which is a good answer because I would have to, you know, in part agree with them that it probably was, you know, the start. But you brought this to my attention. I mean, I knew there were other ones out there, but there's quite a few, and we're going to go through a handful of them here in this article that you threw my way about some early zombie movies. And when I mean early, we're talking pre-Night of the Living Dead, which came out October 1968. So we're going back before that to some zombie movies that, well, look quite horrible. Just,
yeah.
And then some don't look that bad.
Right.
So let's just jump into this list right here. The first one on the list, and of course they start the oldest and then work their way up towards 1968, is the movie from 1932, White Zombie. Now, this is generally thought to be one of the earliest zombie films. It starred Bela Lugosi, and it's the story of a guy who takes and enslaves people by turning them into zombies, including, right, you know, the chick of the movie. There's always, you know, this heroine, you know, this female, you know, hero.
Yes.
And, yep, this one gets it. She gets turned into a zombie. And 1932, White Zombie. And we're not talking about the band. White Zombie was good, too.
I was waiting for that. I was waiting for you to mention that.
There has to be a reference there. Have you ever seen this, yeah, SJ? Obviously.
No, I don't think I've ever seen White Zombie. Heard a lot about it. I know its place in kind of horror history. But it is the first one that I'm aware of that, you know, has unwilling participants as zombies. And that's what zombies kind of were before Night of the Living Dead. And as we go through all these early zombie movies, if you want to call them that, it becomes a theme. These are people that weren't dead and reanimated necessarily. They were just either drugged or put under a spell by, you know, the bad guy of the movie to do his bidding. So they're right. Basically mindless slaves. So zombies before 1968 were just kind of like that. And this is the first example of that.
Yeah, and like you said, they weren't crawling out of the graves. It wasn't because of like a 28-day, you know, epidemic or, you know, some sort of...
Right, it wasn't a virus.
A virus, right. Like, and here's the thing that I just, you know, brought when you mentioned, you know, that we were talking the other night about zombie powder, you know, and there's actually this stuff in Haiti, which is where this young woman in the movie, White Zombie, is lured to for that purpose, to turn her into a zombie. They go to Haiti, which actually has some historic truth to it. You know, the witch doctors or whatever they wanted to call themselves back then, you know, in Haiti. I don't know what exactly they call
them. Hoodoo or voodoo. I'm not sure the difference between hoodoo and voodoo, but
I don't either.
I feel like that was kind of the where all that came from was
pretty
the Haitian
much,
culture, and it kind of spread to modern day New Orleans.
Yes,
you know, there's a lot of that there too. So it's an interesting start to the genre to kind of take it back to its roots in Haitian, you know, witch doctor kind of rituals or things like that. I'm trying to find what that zombie powder is called, because I know exactly what you're talking about. But
right, yeah, anyway. All I know is it was just made as, you know, it was just called zombie powder. I don't know the ingredients. While you're looking that up, we're going to skip ahead 9 years to 1941, right, where we have The King of the Zombies. This is a film. A plane crashes in the Caribbean islands during World War II. And the survivors end up at a spooky mansion of a mysterious doctor. Ooh, I'm on the edge of my seat.
Yeah, it sounds so creepy.
They soon discover that the doctor is, again, turning people into zombies, but not for his own personal weird satisfaction. He's doing it for the German war effort. So there's almost a correlation between, okay, the German war effort. Let's turn... I don't know if that means, you know, the soldiers, because I have not seen this one. The soldiers, they're turning into zombies just to be mindless slaves, like we, you know, mentioned, you know, and right, just to do the bidding of, you know, whoever's in power. But, yeah, for the German war effort, do something, you know, help your country out. Become a zombie.
Right. It almost reminds me of Dead Snow, that Nazi zombie movie.
Yeah.
Have you seen that?
I've never seen that one. I've seen, you know, I think I might have seen maybe bits and pieces of it, maybe started it and just never finished it. But yeah, I know which one you're
talking about. It's pretty good.
Is
it's
it?
Pretty splattery. Yeah.
I
mean, it's totally splatter. Irreverent to history, but
yeah, I doubt that was based in fact.
No, I highly doubt it. But yeah, I haven't seen King of the Zombies either, but interesting.
Interesting. Now we're going to skip ahead about 16 years to 1957. We're time traveling, my friend. 1957, Voodoo Island. Was going back to the old voodoo thing. This one stars
Boris Karloff.
Yes, sir. And he's apparently a rich guy who he wants to develop an island that and you know, dive into this, you know, island, because it's rumored to be cursed by zombies. So he hires a Mythbuster and to try and prove.
Jamie, you're Adam.
What?
He hired a Mythbuster?
That's what
he like says. Jamie and Adam?
Oh, yeah, I don't know if it was them particularly, but.
But he hires some Mythbuster. Okay.
He hires Mythbuster to prove that this shit is false. It's bullshit. But the zombies turn out to be the least of their problems on this weird island. The suspense is killing me.
Yeah, what could be weirder than zombies on the island?
Sunbathing, drinking little fruity drinks with umbrellas.
Yeah, they're not behaving like zombies, but they're undead. What the fuck is going on here?
And they can put down them fruity drinks.
And what kind of Mythbuster do you have to be to prove that an island doesn't have zombies on it?
Not a very good one. I mean, if you see one.
I don't see any zombies. I think you're good. Go ahead.
It's all bullshit. Don't worry about it.
By the island. So that's 1957,
Voodoo Island. 1959, The Four Skulls of Jonathan Drake.
What a great title.
Yeah. Seems
or
kind
bad
of,
title, I guess.
Great title, bad movie. I don't know how that works. The Drake family has been cursed for 200 years because of evil deeds done dirt cheap. No, I'm kidding. Evil deeds done by their ancestors. Wow. So their ancestors, apparently, and the Drake family fucked shit up so bad. And they've been cursed for 200 years. What do you have to do so bad in your family to curse 200 years of that family?
I don't know. Somebody rubbed the wrong lamp or something. Let something out. What the hell? I don't know.
You really got to fuck up in your family to, you know, curse them for 200 years. A Swiss doctor and a tribal witch doctor. Here we go. Going back to the witch doctor, which, as you mentioned, seems to be kind of the running theme through a lot of the earlier zombie movies, unlike what we see now. Both undead victims of the Drake seek revenge on the family over the generations. So, okay.
Open-ended.
Yeah,
plot description there.
It is, man. Where do you go with that one? and here we go. We're going to go south of the border for this next one. 1961, The Curse of the Doll People.
Muñecos Infernales.
You should have you read that. Is that the name of it?
That's what it says here.
Oh, it
Muñecos
does.
Infernales.
Man, that's pretty good.
No, that was actually terrible. But
I know. I'm just trying to, you know, boost your morale here.
I don't need your pity, sir.
This is our, as I mentioned, our Mexican entry into the zombie genre. It's about a group of men who steal an idol from the temple of a voodoo priest. There we go, that voodoo thing again. Bad idea.
Jones.
Yeah, right? That's a idea. You know why? Because he sends zombies called doll people. They don't even call them really zombies. They call them doll people. What do you think about that?
I don't know. The kind of smacks of like a Stepford Wives kind of thing. Doll people. But that was a bad idea, I guess. if somebody sends zombies called doll people after you as punishment. For trying to steal an idol from a temple of a voodoo priest. I mean, I guess it's the punishment
idol?
Fits the crime. Billy Idol? We're going to go there now? It's not a nice night for a white wedding. So let's not go there.
It is not. Anything you want to add on the doll people?
No, I don't think there's anything I could add because, again, I haven't seen this one, believe it or not. I haven't seen this 1961 classic, but apparently doll people are considered zombies. You know, doll people can be zombies too.
Okay.
I guess that's the moral to take away from that.
Next on our list, 1964. Now, this is... Are you a fan of Vincent Price?
I love Vincent Price. He's like the original horror host voice, almost, you know?
Yeah, he is. Yeah, he's got a great damn voice. He stars in the next one on the list called The Last Man on Earth. And this may sound familiar because it was actually an adaptation of Richard Matheson's novel I Am Legend, which I believe starred Will Smith.
Yeah, I mean
the modern version, right?
Adaptation of that, yeah.
And if you haven't seen this particular version with good old Price, he plays a Dr. Robert Morgan, apparently the last man on Earth after a plague turned everyone into vampire-like zombies, or almost everyone else. He soon discovers that he isn't strictly the last man on Earth when he meets a mysterious woman.
Yeah, you're gonna have to watch that one. No spoilers there.
Oh yeah, baby. Come here, mysterious.
The last woman on Earth. So lucky to be stuck on Earth with the last man alive, Vincent Price. Couldn't ask for a bigger stud than Vincent Price, right?
Right, man. If there's only going to be two of you left on Earth, man, wouldn't it be kind of cool just to hang out for eternity or however long, you know, that's going to be, and just hang out with Vincent?
I mean, yeah. I could think of some other...
boring after a while, I guess, you know?
Yeah.
It seems like to me you know, would turn Marilyn, gay kind of quick.
Marilyn Monroe or something, but, you know, to each his own.
Yeah.
Scarlett Johansson.
That concludes this small list, which we got from SerialKillerShop.com.
Shoutouts.
Bam. Get you some of that. So.
And that article was by Aaron Siminoff, by the way. So credit due to that dude for this article.
Good job, Aaron. All right, so...
Unfortunate last name.
Unfortunate last name. So now we see that they were obviously zombie movies that, came out way before, 30-some years before Night of the Living Dead. But Night of the Living Dead has its own aura about it. There's just something about that movie that I believe, like I mentioned in the beginning of the show, that the people, you know, will probably point that movie out as being the one that started it all. But we just gave everyone, what, 5-6 examples of earlier zombie movies. What do you think makes Night of the Living Dead so... stand out so much in people's minds? Why do you think it's such a classic, SJ?
Well, I think the gore has a lot to do with it.
And given funny, the time that it was made, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, because talk about Texas Chainsaw Massacre, for example, as being, you know, the super gory, violent film. But it really wasn't when you go back and watch it. And most horror fans know that. You know, there was just a... maybe three cups of blood in the whole movie. But in Night, there are scenes, man, that are pretty horrific. I mean, we have zombies ripping flesh from bones, and we have, you know, intestines and headshots and blood splattering everywhere and fingers being cut off and, you know, just really horrific shit going on in this movie.
It was
groundbreaking for his time, and I think that's one reason why it's remembered so fondly, I guess you could say, or considered such a classic, because it really did take it actually created the zombie
phenomenon.
Culture, so to speak, the zombie phenomenon that we know today. If it wasn't for this movie, we would have had those quote unquote zombies from those other movies that were just kind of mindless drones. And in this one, they don't really explain why people are turning. They don't really explain right away that they're after flesh or brains. In this movie, they're not after brains. They're just after flesh, as far as we know. And so there, it just brought all this new stuff to the plate that nobody had ever seen before. So I think it just hooked people. And the choice to do it in black and white was also, I think, because at that point it could have been a color film.
Right.
So it was an almost an artistic choice, and there's a lot of light and shadow that you could attribute to just catching people's eyes, I guess. I think it's a very eye-catching film. If you're, you know, walking around through somebody's house and Night of the Living Dead is just playing in the background, your eye is kind of drawn to it because it's very contrasty, black and white. You know, I think they nailed that. So there's a lot going on that made it an instant classic. But what do you think?
Well, you know, I think you kind of hit on, you know, what I was going to bring up, and that is the fact of it being kind of one of a kind movie. Again, in that list of zombie movies that we went through, there's only, I own White Zombie, on a big, you know, classic, you know, 50 DVD type thing. It's got all the black and white classics. Yeah. But I think because 1968, and I know we'll get into this, but, you know, there's obviously some, and you'll let us know, intentional or unintentional, some social issues that, you know, has been seen in that. It was very, I think, in a sense, the what they did in that movie was, well, it's kind of controversial. I don't think that a lot of them earlier movies we discussed were doing some of the things that maybe we see in Night of the Living Dead. That being, you know, eating dead bodies and, you know, eating the flesh, you know, off the bones. I don't think you saw a whole lot of that. And I think that's what gives it its mystique, that it was the one movie in that genre that stood out, that maybe went a level up, maybe went a step further. Than the previous zombie movies. And, you know, which is actually a pretty good segue, because Night of the Living Dead wasn't originally titled that. It was something of the Flesh Eaters or something, I think, is what they were going to call it. And it was going to involve aliens, I think, was the original story that George Romero came up with. Why don't you expand on that, my friend?
Well, yeah, I mean, Romero and his gang of merry men had been basically producing commercials up until this point. They knew that they wanted to do a film, but they couldn't get the funding for it, and they didn't really have a professional crew or anything. And so eventually they decided to say, fuck it, we're doing this. They didn't really have a script. They didn't really have a story in mind. They knew they wanted to start the picture in a cemetery. So that's what they did. They went and set out, you know, set some cameras up. And by the way, George Romero got his first film camera from his rich uncle, who just kind of bought a film camera because he was rich and was like, hey, look, I have a film camera, but he had no idea how to use it. So he gave it to George, and George figured out how to use it. So that camera ends up in this cemetery. They have no idea what they're doing. And so, one of the producers, I should know this guy's name off the top, but
Russo.
Yeah. Yeah. Is it Jim Russo?
Jim or John Russo? John Russo, I think it might be. Yeah.
But he had the idea of a UFO landing in the cemetery, and that aliens would come out of this spacecraft and they'd be hungry for flesh. And I don't know if it was budgetary constraints or just Romero not liking the idea of aliens or what, but that was kind of scrapped. So they were left with this picture that they're trying to start in a cemetery with no bad guy. Like, okay, what's the threat? What is it going to be? And I think it was Romero that came up with, well, we're in a cemetery, so what if the dead people just came back to life? And everybody sat around and was like, yeah, that sounds all right. And so they combined that idea with the flesh-eating alien idea, and that's where we get the Romero zombie. And it turns out, back when they were producing this movie, they didn't call them zombies ever. They called them ghouls. Whenever they were referring to the, you know, living dead, they would call them ghouls. So another interesting tidbit there. They didn't even call them zombies. You know?
Yeah. You were like chock full of little tidbits of info, my friend.
Well, I've been absorbing a lot of Night of the Living Dead trivia over the last week, last 5-6 days or so. So, yeah, it's kind of in my head, man.
Give us some of the let's talk some of the cast and our thoughts on the acting in Night of the Living Dead. Of course, most notable one I think would have to be Dwayne Jones. Was that it, Jones?
Yeah, Dwayne Jones. Yeah.
Which, of course, everybody should know as Ben, the pretty much the only black guy in the movie.
Simply known as Ben, yep. Yeah, he's definitely, there's no other black characters in this movie. No black zombies. No. There's a lot of white zombies. See what I did there?
I see what you did there.
But yeah, he's literally the only black actor in the movie. And yeah, it wasn't by choice, it turns out, at least to hear the commentary track. And that commentary track is a hell of a commentary track, because you got George Romero, you got the actress, I don't remember all their names, but you have the actress that played Barbara on there. Dwayne was actually dead by the time they recorded this commentary, but a couple of other actors from the movie were in there. And at least according to that commentary, they didn't cast Dwayne Jones because he was black. They were just, actually the character was written to be kind of a bossy, pushy asshole trucker guy who would just come in and really take control of the situation. And they found, what they ended up going with, you know, Dwayne Jones, they ended up picking him for the role. Just because he was a great actor, not because of his skin color or anything, which was kind of rare back in the 60s. If you cast a black person in your movie back in those times, it was usually because you needed a black person to make some kind of racial point. You know,
right. Affirmative there was some action.
Kind of right. There was some other motive for casting a black person in your movie, but not in this case.
Not
he
Dwayne.
Was a good actor.
Yeah, Dwayne, he didn't want to play that role of the angry trucker guy. He kind of took that and made it his own. Would you agree?
Oh yeah, definitely. Definitely. He didn't want to play it that strong. He wanted to portray his strength in a different way, kind of a mild mannered way almost. Like, okay, I know shit's going crazy, but everybody take a breath. We're gonna get through this. This is what we have to do. So it's almost like an army mindset, almost like a, you know,
take control
without kicking too much ass. I don't know, a very restrained version of, I think, the character that was intended to be in the original script.
But asses will get kicked if you didn't, you know.
Oh God, yeah.
Follow orders. Yeah. Or...
Every man has his limits.
Every man has his limits. That's words to live by. You heard it right here.
Right here, NLD podcast, words to live by.
Words, you won't catch any of those words to live by on this podcast. All right, so and you mentioned Dwayne he passed. What year was it that he passed away? Was it a heart attack?
He passed away. He died of a sudden heart attack on July 22nd, 1988. In Mineola, New York. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but he wasn't like sick for a long time or anything. It was one of those sudden, just kind of dropped dead one day,
yeah,
kind of things.
That's a shame. Yeah, he was from what I have looked into, he was very much loved on the set by the other actors and actresses,
right,
and everybody working on the movie. Yeah, he was very much a beloved actor, and kind of you know, in the way that he did it, you know, because I mean, what do you think your chances are? You know, somebody's already wrote a script, okay, and this is the kind of person that they wrote, who, you know, they want you to play this particular role. They write it a certain way. And you come in, you're like, no, I don't think I'm going to do that. But we really want you because we really think you're a good actor. Mm-hmm. But I'm not doing it the way you wrote it out. I'm gonna change shit up. That's kind of like Maverick type shit right there.
Yeah. You know? You don't hear about that kind of shit happening nowadays very often, do you?
No, you don't. I guess
you get tossed to offset.
Right. I mean, depending on the, you know, director, some directors will give you that freedom to take.
And depending on your star power, too. And he didn't have a lot of star power coming into that thing.
None of them really did. Yeah.
No. And that's probably why they allowed him to make that change. They didn't know what the fuck they were doing out there making this movie in Pittsburgh. They had no idea. It's their first time really doing this thing. And so they were probably bowing down to this amazing actor that has acting chops. He just didn't want to play the character that way. So I don't think they could really argue with that. Like, well, this guy's a really good actor, so let him play it the way he wants to play it. Pretty much keep the script intact, but just take some of the edge off the character.
Because he did have, I guess, a sense of what they originally wanted, you know, because he was a take-charge kind of character.
Right.
But, yeah, it's... I forgot where I was going with that. I had something I wanted to say.
Oh,
but
that's okay.
Hey, we're just keeping it real, man. See, we haven't missed a beat.
No, we won't. So I have something else to say about Dwayne. Apparently on set when they were, you know, filming this movie, he was like a very gentle guy. Like one of the shots where he's boarding up a door and, you know, he's swinging lumber around. He accidentally hit a cameraman or somebody else on the crew with one of the boards as he's, you know, moving lumber around, like whacked this guy right in the head. And he had to take like an hour or two. They had to cut, you know, all filming because he felt so bad. He was basically, what it sounds like in the commentary, having a panic attack, like, oh my God, just whacked somebody with a 2x4. And he was so sorry for it that he couldn't continue on acting. He had to go like gather himself for a minute and then come back and resume filming. Like, yeah, this guy was apparently an intellectual, kind of quiet guy. Didn't really have a violent streak in him. So to put him in this movie was kind of a stretch for him. And I don't know if you had a chance to listen to that interview with him that I sent you the other day, but it turned out to be his last interview ever. It was right before he passed away. But he completely kind of disowns the character in real life. Like he didn't even own a copy of the movie. He was surprised that it even came out on videotape. He was like, oh, that Night of the Living Dead came out on videotape? Really? I thought that was just a throwaway piece of shit we made back in the late 60s. Like, dude's completely oblivious to his, you know, his what's the word I'm looking for?
His contribution.
His legend.
His legacy in this movie. And, yeah, he probably, as a lot of people did, I think a lot of big movie, companies, Columbia or whatever, you know. A lot of them thought it was, you know, fucking trash. When they first saw it, it wasn't received very well. Which I think a lot of classics are like that. But yeah, he probably didn't realize the true power that this, you know, movie would have for, you know, generations to come. I mean, we're talking
right,
you know, 50 some years, 51 years that, you know, since this movie was released. And people are still talking about it. People are still watching it. I guarantee you that movie theaters would be, you know, cram-packed if they brought the original 1968 and put it on the big screen.
Oh, yes.
Wouldn't that be badass, man?
That would be. It really would be. And I've seen a couple of re-releases like that. Like, I know they're re-releasing Alien, I think, this year. But I actually saw it back in 2003. They put Alien back on the big screens, and I went and saw that, and it was like a religious experience, man, seeing that movie on the big screen. I got to see Ghostbusters on the big screen.
They released that
25th anniversary or 30th anniversary of it or whatever, and they're bringing that back out to theaters again too, which I love that. So yeah, Night of the Living Dead definitely should be one of those that they bring back, because people can't stop talking about it because you can't stop talking about the thing that created, you know, this phenomenon, The Walking Dead. I mean, my God, how huge did that? That blew up bigger than like Breaking Bad or any other TV show I can think of. Yeah. And it's all because of the zombies.
Right.
And it all traces its bloodline back to this movie. And I think it's pretty fucking special that a group of people back in the late 60s could come together and with minimal, you know, minimal resources, but maximum passion for the project.
Right. Yeah. I mean, there was only 10 of them. There was 10 of them. They all put in like $600 a piece. Boom, now you got $6,000. You know, let's make a movie. And as we were talking earlier, you know, none of them really knew how to do any one thing. I mean, some of them may have been a little bit better at, let's say, running a camera, but they all had to pretty much know all the jobs. Because one minute you may be a cameraman, next minute you may be, you know, audio boom mic guy, and the third day you may be a fucking zombie. You're going to be in the fucking movie now. I mean, it was just everybody doing a, you know, all parts and all pulling together to make, again, a classic. And it's just maximum, as you said, you know, maximum dedication and passion for the idea of just making a movie. I've tossed around, you know, in my head, and there's a lot of room up there. You know, the idea of maybe, you know, you watch yourself, of making maybe like, you know, a mini documentary, not even like movie style. I think documentaries are probably a hell of a lot easier to make and more financially feasible on a low budget than making a movie. You know, four people can make, you know, a documentary, a halfway decent one. You don't need, you know, big crews like you would for, you know, a movie production.
Right.
And just thinking about and researching and looking into, you know, how this is supposed to be done and how to go about starting, you know, making a documentary, it is mind-blowing the amount of work that's involved. So I can really appreciate the fact that with Night of the Living Dead, they had everybody being able to do a little bit of everything. That is absolutely, I think, almost a necessity when you're working with a low budget, because you can't hire outside companies to come in and run your, you know, cameras or hire a camera guy or whatever.
Or even you're,
go ahead.
Even at that point, process your film, because, you know, we have to also keep in mind, you know, they were converting this thing from, I think they shot it in 16 and converted it to 35 millimeter, or maybe I have that backwards, but. So they're doing all this film processing themselves too. And, you know, they have no editing room. They don't have an editing machine. Like on the commentary, one of the 10 people associated with bringing this movie to life was describing the editing process. And this guy was like pulling reels of film out. You know, I don't know how that process works really, but he was like, he had the celluloid in his mouth at one point. He had it all wrapped around his arms, and he was just pulling film and processing it, shot, you know, frame by frame. And he probably still has like nitrate in his bloodstream from putting all this processed film, holding it in his mouth while he's, you know, feverishly trying to put this thing together. So yeah, shoestring budget.
Yeah, and a lot of times, you know, with the editing thing, they would take like razor blades and just cut out sections, whatever, and then tape them together, and that's how they would edit back then. They didn't have, really, you know, video type shit, you know, like we have now. We can just, you know, go in the computer and boom, 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 couple clicks, and shit edited. Yeah, no, a lot of times they would have to take, if they didn't have a machine, they would have to take and cut them or snip them with razor blade or cut them with scissors and then tape them together and do shit like that. I mean, it's just crazy the amount of work that went into even making a film. Then, and that, and the complete budget, $114,000. Yeah. Is what it eventually took, 6,000 to get it started and 114,000 total, to actually finish it.
Okay, so drum roll, and the box office was?
Film grossed $12 million domestically and $18 million internationally, earning more than 20 or 250 times its budget. I think we can call that a success.
I think we can call that more than a moderate success, yes.
Mm-hmm.
So from there, everybody knew the name of one man alone. Everybody kind of forgot the names of the actors and actresses that were in this film, but everybody remembered one name, right?
That's it.
George fucking Romero.
George A. Romero. That's right.
Yep.
And
he passed back in 2017, right?
Yeah, I believe it was. Yeah, just a few years ago. Yeah. Yeah, and that odd, I mean, it took 10 of them to start this, dishing out 600 bones apiece. They all put in equal amounts, and we only remember one of the 10.
Right, all that sweat equity, and, well, people like you and I, and probably a lot of the listeners out there, do remember, you know, Dwayne Jones and,
right,
and all the other, people that were a part of the film, but... Yeah, it is kind of strange how history treats film in that way. You think Night of the Living Dead, you think George Romero. You don't think right away Dwayne Jones or let's see, who else? I'm trying to think of the actors' names here.
Well, we have Judith O'Day, Marilyn Eastman.
Eastman. What's up with Marilyn's?
I know. Carl Hardman. I'm actually looking at the poster I have on my wall. I have a small movie poster of the movie.
Carl Hardman. Carl Hardman is the guy in the basement.
Cooper.
Yeah.
Harry Cooper, I think. Judith Ridley and Keith Wayne. I think Keith Wayne was the boyfriend in the original, and he was the one, yeah, I think, out of all of the actors and actresses, he was the one that really had the most, I guess you could say, street cred. He was kind of, you know, pretty popular in the, you know, the uppity scene, you know, and Hollywood and whatnot. So he was probably more of the well-known, well-to-do actors. And he was, you know, I guess, I think he was considered like the little heartthrob. Didn't you say he was kind of a musician or whatnot during that
Yeah,
time?
Yeah. I can't go off too much on that because the only thing I could reference to support that is the actual commentary on my DVD copy. But yeah, it turns out apparently he was a kind of a crooner, I guess you would say. He was a vocalist, a singer.
Okay. And
you can kind of imagine what that probably sounded like in the 60s.
Trash.
It was probably some love song garbage. But yeah, I don't think there was anybody else in the cast that had much of a career before Night, but
yeah, I think you're right. Now, you know, SJ, we've been talking a lot about a lot of the little things and details of the movie production and characters, and I'm wrong in this, but there may be a listener or two, maybe of the younger generation, that has not seen this movie. Can you fathom such a thought, my friend?
Oh, no. If you haven't seen this movie, please stop the podcast. I normally would never say that, but stop this podcast right now and get your ass in front of a TV and watch Night of the Living Dead, the original 1968 joint.
Joint.
And then come back and finish this podcast.
And you can watch it right there on YouTube because we haven't mentioned this and talking the details, but it is public domain. There is no copyright on it, so you can watch it right there. But the point I'm getting at, I guess for those, God forbid, if there is somebody who hasn't seen this, maybe we should just give a, you know, everybody pretty much knows, you know, the whole story behind this movie. Because I think if you're a horror fan, this is one of the ones that you almost have to see. There's certain horror movies that if you're a horror fan, you either should own or have seen numerous times.
Yeah, and I agree.
And this is one of them. So Let's start off and just give a brief maybe rundown of what's going on in the Night of the Living right. Dead. Okay.
All right. So
go ahead.
You start it. You start it off. Well, start off in the graveyard.
Okay. Starts off in the beginning. You have a brother and sister, and they go every year to this graveyard to put flowers on, I think, is it their mother or their father?
It's actually their father.
Their father.
That's a detail that gets, people get wrong a lot of times, but yeah, father.
So they go there and, you know, of course, you know, brother, I cannot believe I can't.
Johnny.
Remember. Johnny, that's it. Yeah, Johnny and Barbara.
Johnny and Barbara.
They're coming to get you, Barbara.
Look, there's one of them now.
They're coming, Barbara. Stop. You're an idiot.
You're ignorant.
You're ignorant. That's what you... So they go and they're putting these flowers on there. Johnny is not liking to have to take this 2-3 hour drive, whatever it was, to just have the shit thrown away. You know.
Right.
And he starts messing with his sister, as we just kind of, very poorly recited. talking about, oh, the dead are coming. They're coming to get you, Barbara. You know,
I thought it was pretty good.
I did too. I was just, playing myself down a little bit.
Kick yourself in the balls.
I'm breaking my own balls. And when he says, look, there's one right now, Barbara, here he comes. That almost had a,
you put a twang on it.
I did. And
to get you, Barbara.
Barbara. Well, it turns out that the one that he says, look, here's one now, Barbara. He actually is a zombie. Now, there's a little struggle. Johnny dies. Smashes his head on the tombstone. He dies. She runs off. Gets in the car. She goes and finds this little house out in the middle of freaking nowhere. And
safe place to hide in any horror movie.
Right. Oh, exactly. I mean, why wouldn't you? And she does trip, by the way, while running from the zombies. bitches always be tripping.
Oh God.
And that's when you get introduced to, a lot of the other characters. We mentioned, the Cooper family with the, creepy little zombie girlfriend or daughter. Yeah, the boyfriend.
Well, we should
girlfriend.
Point out that
go ahead.
Nobody actually owns this house. This is not like,
it's completely
nobody
furnished,
inside
but,
this.
Yeah, but nobody lives there.
Yeah. Yeah, nobody lives there. Everybody in the movie kind of stumbles upon this place at the same time. It's kind of weird that they all find the same place, but
synchronicity, man.
Go ahead. So yeah, Barb finds a farmhouse and goes in and there are zombies.
And then it just kind of, you start seeing the dynamic between, the characters, as we've mentioned, Ben, Dwayne Jones, kind of plays a pretty headstrong, as you mentioned, kind of like military-esque attitude. Yeah. He's taking charge, but he's doing it in a way that he's not being a dick about it, like Cooper. That character was a dick, but at any rate, yeah, they it comes down to where if we can get to the fuel pump, the gas pump, and gas up the truck, I'll jump in and get the hell out of here. I think that was their, that was their big plan. That didn't, work out, too well. but it's just a, and pretty much, I know I'm skipping over because I'm not going to sit here and like tell you people every shot for shot. You know what I'm saying? You heard what SJ told you to do. Turn the damn podcast off. Normally, we will never tell you to do that. Hell, we got to beg you to turn it on. Don't.
Right.
But.
Please listen.
Please. There's confrontation. There's, just it. Bottom line, it's a great movie. there does seem to be some social implications going on there with society at the time. And the whole you had mentioned that, you know, we couldn't figure out, we couldn't be definitive on whether or not it was intentional to put that kind of stuff into it, or it just kind of happened. But with it, I think personally they meant to put it in there only because it seems so in your face when you watch it, that, you know, how racism was at that time in the late 60s. It wasn't long after that MLK was murdered. There was just a lot of things going on there that was going on in the social climate of, you know, that day. So I find it hard that just happened because it was so in your face. But as you told me earlier, I was wrong. What did you find out? Was that intentional or was it or not?
Well, from what I've researched and from what the filmmakers themselves, Romero included, say about it, it wasn't intentional. Like I said before, when they cast Dwayne Jones as Ben, that role was meant for any actor. They didn't have a particular race in mind. And so they cast Dwayne on his acting credentials alone, and he kind of changed the role to suit the character he wanted to play. But I kind of feel what you're saying. Even though Romero and everybody else associated with the movie says that it was unintentional, you know, political discussion or allegory or whatever you want to call it, mm-hmm. I think it's almost like saying the producers and the director of A Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2, Freddy's Revenge, didn't know they were making a gay film. Like, it's like it's a little too much, like you said, in your face, or, you know, the overtones are a little too strong for you to sit here and deny that you never thought that, hey, we're kind of making a social commentary film here. Like, yeah, it's kind of hard to.
Nightmare on Elm Street Part 2 had gay innuendos? What?
Oh, if you don't know, now you know.
I mean, come on, the whole dance routine while he's cleaning his room, if that didn't spell G-A-Y, I don't know what the fuck does.
I mean, there's a lot going on there, and there's a great-looking documentary actually coming out about that called Scream Queen, but Scream, comma, Queen. Yeah, see what they did there?
Not that we're, you know, shitting on alternate lifestyles, but, you know, I mean, if it's in your face, you know what I mean?
I can't wait for that documentary, actually. I can't wait to watch it, because Nightmare 2 is a guilty pleasure of mine, not for any kind of weird Freudian reasons.
Just because. Yeah, but anyway, I find it hard that... that they were able to make it with, you know, make this movie with, you know, not having any, you know, implications in making it a social commentary. It just came out like that. Like I said, it was just so in your face. It's almost like it had to be planned. But as you mentioned, according to Romero and others that, you know, were working on the film, it was not intentional, although it played out quite well. Again, you know, Ben, Dwayne Jones, his character Ben, is mistaken for a zombie. This is the original one, and is shot. And they use these big, like, meat hooks, like you'd grab a big slab of meat with, and that's how they're carrying them out there. Like, they didn't want to touch them. They, you know, because you got these, you know, this group of, you know, backwoods rednecks. You know,
yokels,
yeah. And so, you know, you have just the handling of a you know, a black guy by these rednecks, and it's like they don't want to touch them. They're using these big meat hooks, and it was very much, you know, in your face. But
it very much called back to, like, a lynch mob.
Absolutely. I was trying to think of that particular term, because that's what it appeared to be. In a sense.
And here's the thing. if we're to believe, and no disrespect to George Romero or anyone involved with the production of this movie at all. I don't mean that at all. I'm just saying, if what they say is true, then this movie would have been a lot different if they would have cast, you know, a big kind of overweight white guy as, you know, Ben in the movie. And when he gets shot right between the eyes in that last scene, and then, you know, dragged out, like you're saying, with the meat hooks and put on the fire, mm-hmm. it would have been a way different ending. You know, it would have hit you different. The fact that it is a black man that's the last survivor, and then he gets, you know, he gets murdered at the end and, you know, dragged out by this group of hillbillies and burned on a pyre. You know, if it was a white trucker guy that had been the protagonist the whole time, I don't know. It wouldn't have had the same impact, I don't think.
It definitely wouldn't have had the same feeling. The movie
would have been a totally different movie.
It really would.
A totally different film, which is very interesting to think about. But
yeah, you take one actor out and yeah, boom, you know, or you know, one black actor and put in a white actor, it changes the dynamic of it altogether.
Yes.
Regardless of the acting ability, excuse me, it changes the dynamic. Now,
yeah,
I know I hear keys rattling. I know we're getting close, you know, to the end of this here episode. Hey, keep it down out there, white coats.
Hey, man, don't push them.
Well, you know, they piss me off. They piss me off. Yeah, we'll be done when
we're
done.
Remember what they did last time.
I know it. But I feel that we should, I guess before we get into the 1990 remake of Night of the Living Dead, of course, yep. Everybody's noticed we haven't talked about Dawn of the Dead, which is actually playing on my TV as we speak. Day of the Dead, we haven't talked about that, or any of the other Romero affiliated dead zombie movies.
There's even one that's not, that involves Sid Haig, Night of the Living Dead 3D.
And who knew that? If anybody has seen that,
Sid Haig.
It's Sid motherfucking Haig. It played in a 3D version of Night of the Living Dead. Now, if any of you guys have seen this movie, can tell us anything about it, I think it is our mission. I think we've made it our mission to either watch it or own it. I've made the, you know, commitment to try and own this fucking thing. Please let us know. Let us know in the comments, either over on our Facebook page or there at nightliveanddreads.com, in the little comment section under each and every podcast. Let us know if you've seen it. Let us know what you thought about it. I'll probably still buy it anyway, even if you said it was shit, but I'll probably still buy it.
$2.99.
There you go. Give us a rundown for those, because there may be one or two out there that have not even seen the original. Give us a small rundown of some more Romero films, and you can go chronological order if you want.
Oh, Romero films? Let's see. Well, he's been involved with the Dead series, obviously, since its inception.
What are those movies, by the way? It was Night and then Dawn. And then
the Night and Dawn, and then Day.
Yeah.
So Night was 68, Dawn was 78, Day was 85. And beyond that, you know, he's known for his being part of Creepshow.
Yes,
and
with Stephen King.
Yep. Monkey Shines, which I think I might have seen that movie. Can't remember. I remember the VHS art.
Yes.
You remember the kind of wind-up monkey with the symbols?
Yep.
He was also associated with The Dark Half in 93 and something called Bruiser from 2000. And he also executive produced Tales from the Dark Side from 1983 to 1988. So that's kind of his filmography. I don't know too much about his other movies outside of the Dead series. Mm-hmm. But
well, that's all right, because that's all we're dealing with anyway, is a damn dead series.
Yeah, I mean, the sequels and spinoffs and remakes and stuff could be a podcast on their own, you know?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And
I will say that the remake was actually pretty awesome. I would recommend that to everybody listening. Go check that out, because it's directed by Tom Savini. It sticks close to the original storyline, but there are a couple of glaring differences, especially when it comes to the ending.
The ending was very different.
But you got... It was very different, and it also had kind of a twist.
Yes.
So, and it's got Bill Moseley in it. So
yes,
and Tony Todd and Candyman.
Yeah, Tony Todd, the Candyman, yeah. Plays Ben, of course. And yes, yeah. Bill Moseley, I'm sure better known as Otis B. Driftwood, Chop Top. He plays Johnny. He plays the brother, so he doesn't last long in the movie.
No, he doesn't. But...
Well, you know, I was a little disappointed, because if you remember in the original, Johnny comes back as a zombie.
Oh, yes.
And attacks the house. That would be pretty cool to have seen Bill Moseley come back and just do that little part. I've got to say, I'm kind of a big Bill Moseley fan, and...
Well, no shit.
You don't say.
You don't say. Otis.
Right. So I would have liked to have seen him, you know, come back as a zombie, you know, and whatnot, as we see in the beginning of the, or the end of the original. But all in all.
Driving gloves.
Yeah, the driving gloves, right? All in all, man, I really dug this movie as well. One way that I have found that you probably would have to watch it is maybe, you know, rent it from Amazon Prime. Which we did last night. And
I think you can rent it on YouTube also, but it's like
I think
it's, it's cheaper on Amazon.
Yeah, I think it was like $2.99 that I rented it for. I believe you get, you know, 2 days, 2-3 days, whatever. It was good. I dug it. And of course, as you said, you know, when you got, you know, a movie being directed by, you know, the king of gore, Tom Savini, right. You know, the special effects are going to be good.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I don't know if he did any of the special effects or if he had somebody do them and maybe, you know, kind of oversaw the special effects.
Well, yeah. Even if he did outsource the special effects, which I'm not sure of, I don't have the article pulled up right now, I can't remember, but even if he did oversee him and not do him himself, you know he would not let a shitty effect be in his movie. Like if somebody brought a zombie and its head was supposed to, you know, splatter, and they did a test and it just looked like shit, you know Tom Savini's going to be like, nah, get that shit out of here. Go back and try again. That looks shitty. Come back when you get it right.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
But all right, and this is normally, you know, we normally save our skull rating for when we go to the movies, which is actually going to be next week. NLD goes to the movie. We're going to bring Dom back on. Mrs. Dredge is going to pop in, and we're going to talk four fucking movies.
Yes.
Four of them.
And I already apologize in advance for my movie. I'll just say that.
Just leave it at that. You know, what would you give this? Give us just a little you know, of what SJ thinks and how many stars skulls I should say that this movie deserves, the remake.
Yeah, stars are for pussies,
they
man.
Are.
We do skulls here. All right, out of 5 stars, the 1990 remake of Night of the Living Dead, I would have to give it, and this is a solid 3.5 out of 5. I mean, I almost want to go 4. I liked it a lot. I really enjoyed it. I actually enjoyed it so much, I re-rented it to show my wife, Amber. And she's not a gore hound. She's not a horror head. So to get her to sit through a whole... you know, horror movie is saying something. And I don't know. I think Tony Todd was great. The cinematography was great. The zombies were They looked okay. There were some bad zombie actors in there, for sure.
There was. Well, hell.
There was just some bad acting overall.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Unfortunately, I hate to say it, but Barbara, which is played by Patricia Tallman.
Not the best.
She was,
not the best
she, yeah,
pick.
She was not that good, but I just really believe that, you know, overall, if you can get by some of the bad acting, I mean, Tony Todd is Tony Todd.
Tony Todd and whoever played Cooper.
Oh, Harry Cooper, Tom Towles.
Okay, there you go. Yeah, they had a good chemistry.
Yes.
And that's very important if you're going to remake that movie, because so much of the conflict in the original was between those two characters.
Yes.
And the zombies are just kind of an outside threat, but it was really a human story inside that farmhouse between those two guys. So I think they cast both of those roles really, really well in the remake. So, yeah, I say three and a half. What would you give it? What would you give it?
I'm actually going to go 4 skulls on this one. And the only reason I didn't give it 5 was probably because of maybe some of the, you know, the shitty acting, Patricia Tallman. And I can't say she's a, you know, shitty actress. She's been in, movies. I don't know what she's doing now. I just little small things, and maybe it's just me, little small things. If you are supposed to be, you're an actor or an actress, and you're crying in a movie, you should look like you're crying. You should not look like you're smiling or getting ready to bust out
laughing. Oh, I remember this
laughing.
Detail.
Yes, and that just bugged the holy shit out of me, because it's like, can you not act more upset? I mean, why do you look like you were just told a great joke?
See, I never noticed that. I didn't notice that through both of the watchings.
Yeah.
Both times I watched this movie, I didn't notice that. I was distracted by her weird short haircut. I'm not a fan of that either.
Yeah,
sorry.
Yeah. No, I'm not either. But yeah, no, that shit distracted the hell out of me. Was not the haircut, but that just that, you know, she's crying when she runs into Ben. In the beginning of the movie, she's supposed to be upset, but again, she looks like, I mean, you can look at her eyes and be like, is she laughing? Did Tony Todd, did Candyman whisper a joke in her fucking ear? What's going on here?
What kind of joke does that guy tell?
Man, right? He don't know. He looks like he has issues. I like him as an actor.
He's seen some shit.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, they couldn't have picked a better guy to be Ben in the remake. And I guess that, you know, one of the reasons I give it 3.5 out of 5 instead of 4, it automatically gets a point deducted for being a remake. I don't care how good your remake is. You didn't come up with that idea, so you automatically get a point deducted. That's just the the SJ scale. I just revealed my first name.
I thought you sneezed.
That was bound to happen. Fuck it.
All right.
Automatic point deduction for being a remake. That's all.
Well, you know, I get that. I get that. I don't think I've really ever given a remake. I've never put them that high on the scale. There's always a slight.
Yeah, it's a pretty good one.
Yeah, but it is. I think it does the original justice. I think
it's like a good cover song.
Exactly. I think they did good with the actors that they got to, you know, bring about these characters again. But yeah, I mean, you don't get, you know, 5 skulls if it's a remake. I agree 100%. You can't keep, you know, taking other people's fucking ideas and just putting your twist on it and be like, look what I did. No, you didn't do shit, motherfucker.
Yeah. Look, I cast a black person to be Ben too.
Right.
It would have been more interesting if they would have cast a different race character, not to make it that way, but, you know, to take it back to the original script, just have anybody else be Ben except for a black person and see if it has the same, you know, the same emotional punch. Mm. I don't think it would.
I don't think it would either. I think you almost had to go there.
I don't think it would work. It would just be a generic zombie movie at that point with nothing else to say.
All right. Well, anything else that you want to throw in about Night of the Living Dead, maybe for those listening, again, God forbid, those listening who haven't seen it, or anything you want to throw in on the remake, man? Final words.
Not on the remake. I definitely say check it out. But as parting words, I would say to definitely go check out Dawn of the Dead and Day of the Dead. And hopefully we'll cover those sequels in the future because they're all good in their own ways up to a certain point.
Sure.
The legacy of Night of the Living Dead is a long and drawn out one. So
it very much is. And again, if you have not seen these, shame on you. You should. Right. But if you are...
For shame.
Yeah. I mean, maybe a listener here or there is new to the, you know, just recently a newbie horror fan. And we love you too. Don't worry about it. Go watch this fucking movie. I mean, we shouldn't be
suckling
saying,
at that horror teat.
Suckling on the horror teat. Well, with that, yeah, he said fucking teat, white shirt. White shirt, white coat.
Please don't talk to him like that.
No, I will. I'm tired of these fucks. All right, well, they're harassing me now, so beating on the cage here, on the door. It is time to get the hell out of here, SJ. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, and thanks for listening, everybody. Tune in next time.
Don't forget. Back soon. Yeah, and don't forget, you catch us over on Spotify. We're hoping to get the podcast out on other podcast platforms. I know people, they like to, people like podcasts these days. Hopefully you like ours. So check us out over there, Spotify, Night of the Living Dreads, Dreads with no A. Over there, nightlivingdreads.com, Night of Living Dreads over there on Facebook. And... I hope you guys enjoyed this. I want to thank you guys for listening. I apologize for SJ. I don't know why. I don't know why. I'm trying to be funny. I don't know where I was going with that.
Well, you went somewhere. I don't know where you were trying to go with that either. But
I don't know you.
I'm sorry for myself.
Oh, man. Hey, great show. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Hey, and next week, again, Night of Living Dreads, we go to the movies. We got four big ones for you. Get the fucking popcorn ready. We'll see you next week.
Get the barf
week.
Bags ready.
Get the what?
Barf bags.
Barf bags. All right, folks. Hey, for SJ, this is OSB Dreads. We'll see you on the other side.
Things no one knows. We're going to die.